the Maximize Business Value podcast. This podcast is brought to you by Mastery Partners, where our mission is to equip business owners to maximize business value so they can transition their business on their terms. Our mission was born from the lessons we've learned from over 100 business transactions, which fuels our desire to share our experiences and wisdom so you can succeed. Now here's your host, CEO of Mastery Partners, Tom Bronson.
Hi, this is Tom Bronson, and welcome to Maximize Business Value, a podcast for business owners who are passionate about building long-term sustainable value in their businesses. In this episode, I'd like to welcome our guest, Jim Roddy, author of The Walk-On Method to Career and Business Success. Now, I've known Jim for many years, probably close to 20 years. We've had the opportunity to share the stage at many events, and more importantly, to become good friends. I have always admired Jim's business wisdom, his willingness to share and teach, and his quick wit, as hopefully you'll learn today. We're in for a lot of fun today, a fun ride, so buckle up and let's get started. Welcome to Maximize Business Value. Jim, tell us about yourself before we get started.
Thank you, Tom. It's great to be here with you. And just, you know, we've only known each other for only 2 years. It just feels like 20, you know, because time flies when you're having fun. When you're not, it just feels elongated. So, thanks for having me here. So my role that I have, my main job is I work as Vice President of Sales and Marketing and a business coach for the Retail Solution Providers Association. It's the largest collection in North America of value-added resellers, software developers, distributors, and vendors who have served the technology needs of retailers, restaurants, grocery stores, and also convenience stores as well. My background, to go back a little bit further, when I was 23 years old, it's when I first became self-employed. I published a sports magazine for Northwest Pennsylvania, which is where I still reside today. Then I moved into technology magazine publishing. I did that for 18 years at a publisher based here in Northwest PA. The last 11 years, I was president of that organization. Again, it was a multi-million dollar organization. We had a lot of different tech titles under our umbrella. I also currently have a podcast called The Trusted Advisor. It's under the RSPA umbrella. And then where you and I have met, I serve as a moderator at a lot of tech conferences as a speaker. And then also I'm an author as well. And really the main area that I tend to speak about and I write on is about business and leadership best practices.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the RSPA. That is a wonderful organization. If you happen to be in the technology side of restaurants and retailers, you need to be a part of that organization, a wonderful organization. And both of us have many opportunities. Well, you have a real opportunity to work there because you actually do work there.
Yes.
So the Walk-On Method to Career and Business Success is your third book. I admire that quite a bit as I'm trying to finish up my second book. What was your inspiration and why did you decide to write this book?
Yeah, I will say anybody who's written a book before knows it's not like some breezy, fun process. Like it is not just running through mud. It's like running a marathon through mud oftentimes. Like as good as the book is, you know, as your stories are that you come across and your goal, it's a long road. So it wasn't my desire to like, ooh, I have to do a third book. But it really started as an attempt to clarify a misunderstanding. So at an event that you and I have attended, the RSPA Inspire Winter Conference, an executive friend of mine had learned that I was a cancer survivor because I published a book about 8 years ago on hiring best practices called Hire Like You Just Beat Cancer. That was my first book. So, and just as an aside, I was diagnosed with colon cancer in 2002, but as of October 1st, I'm going to be cancer-free for 18 years. So I always have to tell that so people don't think is it is still an ongoing thing. So thank goodness for me, it's in the rearview mirror. So when this friend learned that I was a cancer survivor, he said, oh, well, now that I know that you had cancer, I understand why you're so driven. I understand why you do everything with a purpose. But the reality was, I didn't wake up every day thinking about myself as a cancer survivor. And so it made me think, well, what really drives me? And I realized that I attack cancer and my professional career the same way that I approached my role as a basketball walk-on in the late 80s and early 90s at where I went to college, Gannon University here in Erie, Pennsylvania. Now, I'm guessing most people are like, Gannon, what? Like, I never heard of that school before. But back in the day, it was a small college basketball powerhouse. And so, you know, for me to even try out for that team where they had guys 6'7", 6'9", you know, out of the Army, recruited by UNLV, right? Like powerhouse guys, for me to even think that I should walk on that team or be a member of it was kind of crazy in its own. But the behavior pattern that I established as a walk-on through the 4 years of commitment and hard work, perseverance, and resiliency, I realized like that is the blueprint for professional success, not just mine, but anyone's professional success. So I started thinking about it more. I wrote down the formula and then shaped it over time into five steps. And I was like, I want to share this with everybody, but who wants to hear my personal stories about work and being a bench warmer, right? No one's going to be like, please, Jim, do go on about that game against Queens College. Tell me more, right? There had to be more than that. And so I didn't think my story alone would motivate anybody to change. So I'm like, well, let me test my hypothesis. What if I track down and interview 10 or 20 or 30 former fellow walk-ons about their college experience and their professional path? What I learned that the walk-on method produced uncommon extraordinary results for them too. And I can tell you, Tom, after more than 5 years of internet searches and hundreds of emails and phone calls and interviews with dozens of former walk-ons, the answer to my question wasn't just yes, it was an overwhelming, screaming at the top of the lungs, yes. And so each walk-on's path was unique. So some of them play football or basketball, or they did rowing or track, but then they all achieved success as a business owner, an engineer, a coach, a lawyer, financial advisor, filmmaker, insurance broker, right? So different sports, different lines of work, but the mindset, the skills, and the behaviors that they developed, and then the outcomes that they achieved after college, they were all similarly remarkable. And so that's kind of the gist of this book, is ordinary people, even underdogs, and maybe especially underdogs, they're the ones who accomplish extraordinary feats when their energy is properly channeled. So the way that these walk-ons behave is now second nature to them because they were forced to behave that way as a walk-on. And so the book profiles 31 underdogs who became extraordinary, and kind of the walk-on formula is they show you one story at a time how you can become extraordinary too, or how you can take your business to an extraordinary level.
Wow. Wow. All right. So I have to back up here. You were walking on against some guys. I have to put my glasses on so I can actually see this. Walking on against some guys that were 6'7" and 6'9". You were kind of then the Muggsy Bogues of Gannon. I know we're sitting during this, but if you can't sit, you know, Jim's only 4 foot tall. So,
good Muggsy Bogues reference. I appreciate that. I actually got to see him play in high school, and he was super quick. I was not. So the thing is, Tom, so, and this is something I learned the hard way firsthand. So I was only 5'11", 145 pounds. And so those guys who are not just taller than you, like everybody outweighed me by more than 30 pounds, right? Like everybody was 170 something or 180 something. And I realized when you take a bump from one of those guys, like you really feel it. Where in high school, you know, you kind of brushed it off. So it was the height disadvantage, but it was really the weight and the strength so much that kept me on the end of the bench for 4 years, as much as I tried.
Wow. You did get some playing time though, right?
Very, very minimal. And I tell people I average 14 points for my career, not 14 points a game. Over 4 years, I scored 14 points. So I did get some playing time, really lived out a lifelong dream for me, just being a member of the team and seeing some mop-up time as well.
That is awesome. You know, I often find that the great business lessons are found in very unusual places. You know, we typically, when we want to learn something, we'll turn to business experts or books or blogs when we want to learn new things. But in your book, you explain those five steps that you mentioned here of the walk-on method and how you can apply these lessons to your career and business. You know, just from the introduction to the book, I wanted to read a snippet there. Most people don't realize that they're in control of their career trajectory. We're advised by family and friends to play it safe, follow a well-worn path, or choose the most financially prudent option. We're encouraged to seek immediate rewards for our efforts and look out for number one. but ordinary people will accomplish extraordinary feats when their energy is properly channeled. So let's jump in here. Let's talk about these steps. Step one is take a big shot. Tell us about that.
Yeah. So step number one, take a big shot, and all the steps have a step and then some details underneath. So take a big shot. Anybody can make a layup, right? So don't sell yourself short when you're setting your next goal, whether it's your professional goal or whether it's a goal for your organization. I know a lot of folks here are business owners. And when you're working with your team, don't let them take just a short goal as well. So you don't want to contemplate what you really want and then aim for something far less just to play it safe, because anybody can do that, right? Like, you want to hit 2% of your sales goal? Well, anybody can do that accidentally. Why don't you go for 110%? So instead of that mindset, take a big shot. And so a great example of that is in chapter 10 of the book. So Colleen Healy. So she's a Connecticut native from a small town in Connecticut. And so she was a very good high school athlete in both basketball and softball. She accepted a scholarship to play basketball Division II New Haven, right? So you're thinking, wait a second, walk-on book. She's got a scholarship. I don't get it. But she was the first in a very middle-class family to attend college. And the way that she explains it is New Haven was more of a default versus a decision. It was the only one who really had an interest in her. She didn't know anything about college and she wasn't a great student. And so she's like, okay, I'll take the first opportunity. And you know, there's sometimes you think people are going to encourage you. She had an employee in her high school say, she's never going to pass a class in college. I don't even know why she's trying to do that. So she goes to New Haven. She has a productive start as a freshman. She's leading her team in minutes played and she's second in points, but she's restless. She's saying, I can do better than this. So at the semester break, she packs up all her belongings. She drives home through a blizzard, but she doesn't make it home because her car catches on fire. She gets picked up as a hitchhiker to stop somewhere to get a little bit closer to home, get dropped off at some friends. Once she gets to her friends, she says, Mom, Dad, I'm dropping out of school. In fact, I already did. And I know I'm giving up the scholarship. Oh, and by the way, the car broke down. It's on fire on the highway. And she said, I want to play for Division I Power UConn. She said, I don't want to be 30 years old and wonder if I was good enough. And so her dad said, that's all I need. I'm supporting you, whatever we can do. Now, but it wasn't an easy road for her. She wasn't on UConn's map at all from, you know, she wasn't that great of a high school athlete. So what she did was she worked as a camp counselor that summer at UConn. And then she reached out to Gino Auriemma, who's now a legendary, you know, Hall of Fame coach, on her rotary phone, right? Dialed him up. And she said, I'd like to be a member of the team. And he said, well, you can be a manager for a year and then you can try out, but no guarantee whatsoever. And she said, I'll take it. So she goes from a scholarship athlete playing a ton of minutes to sweeping floors, filling water bottles, turning on the lights for the team. Well, long story short, she ends up making the team. She was a scorer in high school. She worked on her defense and her hustle, rededicated herself in the classroom as well. And she became a reserve guard for three NCAA tournament qualifying teams. This is when UConn was really just getting started. And she has a great highlight. They were at Georgetown one time. Down one, 38 seconds left. Jen Rosati, if anybody's a women's basketball fan, knows she was like a legendary, you know, national player of the year. She fouls out. Colleen gets in the game, steals the ball, gets a layup, gives them a lead, causes a turnover, hits two free throws, gets a headline in the paper, walk on rescues Huskies. And so you think like your head would be big after that. And so Gino said to her after the game, just, you're not going to be an offensive target, kid, you know, just so you know. So she takes that experience and talks about what that meant for her. And after graduation, she said, if I can do that, if I can go from a, you know, no one's expecting me to survive college, no one's expecting me to be able to make the team at UConn, to be a player for them and to do well in the classroom, I can do anything. She ended up moving south, pursuing a career in medical sales, advancing to senior positions at two multi-billion dollar companies over 22 years, and always looking to take a bigger shot. She left the medical field to become a consultant. She co-founded a leadership organization, and she speaks to corporations and student athletes across the United States. And she tells them, you never know when your day is going to come. And if you're going to get the goal that you want, you've actually got to go for it. You've got to take that big shot. So again, that's step number one. Don't set short goals. Really go for it. Take that big shot.
That's awesome. That is awesome. You know, an old adage of mine and many people, I'm sure you've heard this, you miss 100% of the shots you never take, right?
That's right.
And so, boy, she really took a huge shot here. You know, not only having
having made this up in her own mind, but it's so important to have kind of those support mechanisms that, you know, once she determined this and her parents, you know, supported her 100%, boy, that is great to have kind of that that support behind her. What a great lesson to learn. So tell us about making a passion statement, which is step two: prepare with passion, practice with passion, and then play with passion.
Yeah, and I'm glad you gave the sub headline to that. So a lot of times people think, you know, you see somebody playing really hard in a game. Man, that person plays with passion. I want to do that. But the reality is you got to go all the way back and prepare and practice just as hard, if not harder, than the games. And so too many people, they have a dream and then they just wish it all come true, right? They, oh, please let this thing happen. I hope, cross my fingers. And, or they say, you know, when that moment comes, I'm going to jump at it. But you can't be wishing, you can't be waiting. And so the recommendation in the book is to walk on to your dream, right? Not just, again, not just play with passion, but also prepare and practice. And a great example of this is Dave Martin. And just a little spoiler alert, it's now Dr. Dave Martin. He's a physician. He runs a successful clinic today. And so this is going all the way across the country, Cal State Chico and track. And so he was a decent track athlete in high school, but he said he wasn't also, you know, like a lot of walk-ons you think on as like Rudy from the movie Rudy, like uncommonly industrious, super high commitment. And Dr. Martin said, I just kind of showed up in school because I didn't have a place to live anymore. Why'd you go to Cal State Chico? Well, I had a really good party school reputation, right? He said, I was just kind of floating through life. Now, he liked running and he decided I might want to run track here. So he literally walked onto the track, found one of the coaches, and the coach like, well, I guess you can try. Now, the good news for him was the coach was a guy named Larry Burleson, a former Green Bay Packer who was under Vince Lombardi, right? Like the old school of old school guys. And Dr. Martin describes Coach Burleson as, he says, a combination of mean and grumpy and old, though he wasn't very old at that point. But he said, you know, after Coach Burleson kept pushing him and pushing him, he said, maybe for once in my life, I should really try to be the best. I should sacrifice. I should sleep. I should train. And he said, boy, this is what was missing. I thought I was giving an effort, but I was not giving maximum effort. So he was one of the few walk-ons in our book. A lot of them just made the team and, you know, did everything they could to keep the roster spot. Dave Martin actually ended up being a 3-time Division II All-American, school record holder, inducted into the school's Athletics Hall of Fame. But he applied himself in the classroom as well. He was an exercise science major, and he said, maybe I should become a physician. He said, but I looked at myself like, I'm not really doctor material, but you know what? What if I go and outwork everybody? What if I stay up longer than everybody instead of drinking and go and actually be studying, right? I'm going to do everything and overcome someone else's talent or their genius by outworking them. And so again, long story short, he's now the owner of Embrace, which is a medical center for women's wellness based in Bristol, Tennessee. He's also an associate professor at East Tennessee State. And he's also considered a pioneer in, get this, Tom, I don't know exactly what this is, but minimally invasive bioidentical hormone replacement solution. So I don't know what that is, but it's pretty impressive for a guy who was just floating before he developed that walk-on attitude and really said, I've got to make sure I practice, prepare, and play with passion.
You lost me after minimally invasive. I thought, okay, I got this, and then you kept going, and I, boy, that is awesome. All that passion. You know, we make decisions sometimes in our life that we don't realize are lifelong decisions, right? Well, he decided to go to school because it was a party school, and that changed the direction of his life. You know, it changed his whole trajectory. Of course, you know, you add that with his work ethic, and what an amazing story. You know, what's fun about this is hearing these great sports lessons that translate into business. I love hearing these great stories. So, you know, many times business owners kind of feel like they're on a treadmill. And when you're on a treadmill, you're not, covering any ground. You're not covering any new ground. You're on more like a hamster wheel. So step three is run uphill. It takes longer and makes you stronger. I will tell you that personally, that's the hardest time. I run every morning, as you know that. I'm running, if people ask me what I'm running from, and I'm running from old age. Unfortunately, it keeps catching me. But the hardest time is that when you have to commit to running uphill. Why is that important in business?
Good question. So, you know, a lot of folks know we're taught to avoid obstacles and find the path of least resistance. And then when things get difficult, our human tendency is to shrink or close our eyes or just hope that it goes away or get apprehensive. And so this goes back to, you talked about you running. The run uphill comes from something that I actually did. This is before I became a walk-on. When I was younger, I ran at a lot of road races and I did cross country. And when people would hit a hill, they would slow down. And so what I started doing was I would see a hill and I would attack it. I would run up it. I would charge up and I would sprint. Now, there's one thing about passing somebody in a race, and then there's passing somebody on a hill. They're looking over at you like, are you nuts? Like, why are you sprinting uphill? Like, that's totally crazy. But again, that's part from my life. I realized walk-ons don't avoid the obstacles, right? It had been easy to play for the intramural team or go to a lower level college. And some of these folks who were profiled in our book, what they did is when there were difficulties, instead of shrinking from them, they leaned into them. They embraced the obstacles. If you've ever read the book, The Obstacle is the Way, that's very much how these walk-ons view, how they viewed it, not just when they were in school, but also in their professional life. Because they know on the other end of the experience, they're going to end up being battle-tested. So when you encounter a career challenge, a professional challenge, you see everyone around you like wishing the moment would pass. Like, oh, there's a recession. This is terrible, right? Like, I don't want to participate in it. I'm just nervous. Hopefully this thing will pass. Show courage. Jump headlong into solving the problem and convert it into an opportunity convert it into a victory. So a great example of this is a guy named Chris Doering. So he's a walk-on and a business owner as well. So stellar three-sport athlete in high school in Gainesville, Florida. He had awards in football, basketball, and baseball. He was also the lead in the musical theater production. He calls it the greatest senior year in the history of senior years. He had a long list of college options, but none of them was a football scholarship from the University of Florida, his hometown dream team. And he said, that's what I want to do, and that's what I'm going to go do it. So he chose to pursue a walk-on role. Now, this is the early 90s. Steve Spurrier just started getting All-American talent. So as Doering is on the sidelines, he's getting fewer reps, but he's still putting in extra work, working his way up the depth chart. Well, he ends up earning that scholarship his junior year, and he said, I felt like I needed to run upstairs and sign the scholarship paperwork before they took it away from me. So he goes from a walk-on to a scholarship guy to a starter. And then playing, this is 1993, they're playing at Kentucky. They're down by three with just 8 seconds left in the game. They're just beyond midfield. Danny Werfel finds Chris Doering down the middle, catches it for the game-winning touchdown. He's like, how do I go from a walk-on to a hero, like in the matter of just a few years? And so he ended up improving so much. He was selected in the 1996 NFL draft, actually played in the NFL for 10 years as well. He said one of the moments that made him realize that he needed to retire is when he looked across the field on a kickoff. He's like, that guy is 3 inches and 40 pounds heavier than me, and he's going to run right through me. And sure enough, he did. So once he got done with his NFL career, what he did was he joined the mortgage industry. Now, that was right around 2008, just in time for the Great Recession, right? And so, talk about running up a hill. This is like climbing a mountain in your bare feet. So he could have bailed because he was just very new in that industry, but he said, I'm going to fight through this. And he did that. He got through the financial crisis, established his own business. And he said, you have to block out the distractions and all the periphery. And I needed to focus on what I actually wanted. And then the next phase of what he wanted to do was he wanted to get into broadcasting. So he built up his company and delegated it as time went by. And now he pursued a sideline career in television broadcasting, got rejection, rejection, rejection. But again, long story short, he now works as a TV analyst in the studio for the SEC network. So all these organizations that turned him down before, they now get to see him on TV, and a lot of them have pursued him as well. So again, that's Chris Doering, just a great example of running uphill, not avoiding the hard situation, and really leaning into it.
I love that. Imagine, if you will, all of the success stories that we would have in the world today if people didn't give up on their dreams so easily, right? I mean, you make a bet with yourself, and it's easy to let yourself off the hook, so to speak. I always say that it gets the very hardest right before that breakthrough moment, right? And for him to have many options to go other places, I would argue that I had probably arguably the best senior year ever, but he and I'll just say, you know, let's get Chris on the next podcast and we can go head to head about that. But a lot of people, when they don't get what they want initially, they just give up, right? Or they'll try half-heartedly before they get that breakthrough moment, and it's pushing through that feeling, that's when the breakthrough happens. So these are great stories. We're talking with Jim Roddy and having more fun than we should be having, but let's take a quick break. Back in 30 seconds.
Every business will eventually transition, some internally to employees and managers, and some externally to third-party buyers. Mastery Partners equips business owners to maximize business value so they can transition their businesses on their terms using our four-step process. We start with a snapshot of where your business is today. Then we help you understand where you want to be and design a custom strategy to get you there. Next, we help you execute that strategy with the assistance of our amazing resource network. And ultimately, you'll be able to transition your business on your terms. What are you waiting for? More time? More revenue? If you want to maximize your business value, it takes time. Now is that time. Get started today by checking us out at www.masterypartners.com or email us at info@masterypartners.com to learn more.
We're back with Jim Roddy, author of The Walk-On Method to Career and Business Success. Jim, talk about step four, no fuss, all must, maximize unique strengths.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. There are two parts to this step. So no fuss means control your emotions, especially the negative ones, as you seek to advance your career, as you seek to build your organization. So if you need to have a difficult conversation with a coworker or a client, you've got to ignore the pit in your stomach. You've got to initiate that conversation. If you're frustrated that you're working late while friends and other people are going out, you just got to get over yourself, right? Any amount of energy that you spend ruining your lot in life is energy wasted. Okay, so no fuss, control those emotions. And then all must means, so it's capital M, capital U, capital U S, maximize your unique strengths. So most of the walk-ons we profile were shorter, skinnier, and or slower than many of their more gifted scholarship athletes. And so they figured out what was their special ability or attitude that they brought to the team, and then they maximized that to benefit the whole. And a great example of that is another entrepreneur. We feature him in Chapter 7, Brandon Landry. And so it's really easy to tie his walk-on experience to his professional success because he's the co-founder and the co-owner and the CEO of Walk-On's Sports Bistro. So it's a fast-growing restaurant, started in the Southeast, continuing to grow throughout the United States. Drew Brees is actually a part owner of Walk-On's now. He joined their ownership group a couple years ago. And so what Brandon says is everything that they talk about at the company, it all goes back to the days of him being a walk-on and being a member of a team. So he went to Baton Rouge Catholic High School. He was all district, 14 points a game, had some small college options, but again, decided to take a big shot and walk on at LSU. Now, the first step of doing that is, like, you have to work up the nerve to tell the coaches that you want to try out for the team. So he goes in, like 18 years old, knocks on the door to the men's basketball office. They're like, what are you doing here? Like, we don't know you. And so he's got to walk into the head coach's office and, you know, had to work up the courage to say, I'd like to try out for the team. So this is October 1997, of 60 kids try out, and he gets cut. And so instead of him crying about it, it's not fair, I did better than so-and-so, right? Like complaining and pointing fingers, I'm quitting, I'm giving up. He took it on himself and he said, I need to work harder. I've got to play more. I've got to get stronger. I have to do the things that I need to make this team next year. Now, it turns out 1 month later, he gets a call back. Now, it's only to be a practice player, not to have a roster spot, but just to show up at practice. And so he says he got that call. He was actually home for the weekend. His dad's a sugarcane farmer. And that's when he got the call. He's like, I'm jumping up and down next to the tractor, like, I get to be a practice player, right, for LSU. Well, they said, guess what? Practice is at 6:30 a.m. So instead of whining, that's too early, he got there at 5:30 in the morning, right? He was the first one outside the building. Now, he said he was excited excited, but he was scared to death. You know, a 5'11 kid going up against 6'8 All-Americans. He said it was hard to get around them. Like, I'm getting manhandled by these guys. They try to play me one-on-one after practice, and they're just beating me up. So again, he didn't cry. He committed to get better. So in the offseason, he worked on his strength. He ended up making the actual active roster the next year. Now, it didn't come easy for him. He didn't have his name on his uniform the first several games, and the coaches were like, don't worry, your shooting shirt's not going to come off, right? Nobody's going to know who you are. In fact, his head coach, John Brady, didn't even know his name. He just referred to him the whole time as, hey, walk on to him. But he developed a relentless attitude to stay on that team. And there was another walk on the team, Jack Warner. And so when they were on the road together, they went to a bunch of top rate restaurants and they said, you know what? Baton Rouge doesn't have one of these. So on a flight home from a game at the University of Tennessee, they started sketching out the concept for walk-ons, right? On literally on the back of a napkin, right? Where all great ideas start. And then 3 years later, after graduation, they open up the first one. And so, and they also got turned down by a ton of banks too. So he really had to push through to do that. And so the walk-on culture was infused from day one. Their tagline is, everyone deserves a little playing time, right? And it's got a double meaning. Everybody's part of a team. And even though Brandon only played 10 minutes the entire year, they made it to the Sweet 16. He felt like it was a big part of that team, keeping the energy level up. And that's his mentality as well with the team that he has today. Like, the dishwasher is important as the person on the front lines because they need to keep everything really clean. And so one story I love to share when I'm telling about Brandon, he didn't learn this firsthand, but he learned it secondhand through Jack Warner. So Dale Brown, the first day of practice, Lester Earl was the number one recruit in the country. He was a freshman. But Dale Brown starts off the practice, the head coach, legend, and says, Lester Earl, stand up. Anybody who knew who this is? And everybody's like, yeah, it's Lester Earl. He tells Jack Warner, the other walk-on, hey, Jack, stand up. Does anybody know who this is? They're like, I have no idea. And he said, let me just make it clear. Jack's a walk-on. Lester's the number one recruit in the country. If I see you treating Jack any less than you treat Lester, your scholarship goes to Jack. Is it clear? We are all part of this team, right? And so that was a precedent. Everybody's a part of it. Everybody makes a contribution that makes a team better. And again, so Brandon learned this, but it all started off with he had unique strengths and he had to fight through the negative emotion to make sure he's able to realize that dream of his.
That, you know, getting up the courage to actually have that conversation at the beginning, you know, you wouldn't be there if you didn't have that conversation at the beginning. I hadn't read that story yet about the encouragement from the coach, but that is awesome. What, again, another great area where you get encouragement to continue and play on. But one of the things that you mentioned earlier there is that really it goes to emotional intelligence. I don't know why they call that EQ. Shouldn't it be like EI?
Yeah, I think that's like emotional IQ or emotional quotient or something like that.
Yeah, emotional intelligence is you know, being able to be in control of your emotions, even though you're scared to do something, control that and go do it. I find often in business situations that sometimes emotions get out of control, and when emotions get out of control, you never actually come up with a good final solution on either side. And the way I've always put it with our team is the first person to lose their cool is probably going to lose. Go ahead.
Tell them, I call that the freak out factor. So I learned that when I did a lot of coaching where I would coach youth basketball players. And so we would say, if we keep our composure, we talk composure a lot. If we keep our composure, the other team is going to end up losing theirs. And so we embedded that in the kids. We taught that to them and they would start pointing it out. Oh my gosh, they're starting to freak out, like the freak out factor. And they almost felt like they had this secret to it, but that's true in business as well. Nobody's ever written a book or told a story of, and then I got really, really frustrated. I lost my mind. And then everything started falling into place, right? Like once you start doing that, everything just goes sideways. So yeah, you've got to make sure, and you can lose emotional control, whether you're an 18-year-old kid walking in to see this head coach or whether you've been running your business for 50 years. You've got to make sure you keep those in check no matter what.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's get on to step five. You know, we've been through the first four steps. Finally, you say, goodness, I'm going to need to get a drink of water here. You're choking me up, Jim. So
the finally pattern you continues.
Say, yeah, exactly. So you say that that step five is make them throw you out of the gym. Never, ever, 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 ever quit. I love that. So tell us more about that.
Yeah, six evers. Five isn't enough. Seven's too many. Six evers is the right amount. But too many times. So I ran into this personally. When I played basketball at Gannon, I would also go and play at the rec center afterwards and do some pickup games. I played against a lot of other students at Gannon who were taller than me, who were better than me, that weren't on the team. And they were like, oh, I just figured I wouldn't make the team, right? And my thing was, I'm going to make them throw me out of the gym. And that's what a lot of these walk-ons do as well. And so Alan Williams is an example of that. This is chapter 26. So he walked onto the Wake Forest basketball team. So it's a very good, you know, ACC school. Dave Odom was the coach. And so when he ended up walking on, he said he was overwhelmed physically. And Coach Odom tells at the end of the freshman year, we're not going to have you on the team next year. So again, instead of saying like, well, I guess that's a no. And instead of transferring or hanging up his sneakers, he just kept showing up at the weight room. He kept showing up at the track for cardio work and then kept showing up at the gym and playing. The coaches actually said, stop it. These are official off-season workouts. You're not on the team. Don't come around anymore. So then Coach Odom ends up leaving Wake for South Carolina. And so what does Alan do? He's like, hot dang, I'm back in the gym, right? I'm going to go and do all this stuff again. Well, then Skip Prosser gets named the head coach. And so Alan ends up showing up for preseason workouts. And the coaches say, yeah, you can join us. Oh, but you're going to be the designated passer. So they essentially treated him as a manager. So, but after showing up early and all that stuff, Coach Prosser calls him into his office. And Alan's like, this is it. He's going to tell me I'm on the team. He runs across campus and Coach Prosser says, you know, we are going to have a walk-on, but it's going to be somebody who's 6'6 or 6'7. We need somebody to bang with the big guys. We have too many guards and Alan's only, you know, 6'2". And so Alan, again, instead of just saying, well, this is it. They told me to go home. This is the message I was looking for. He said, you told me the gym's the best place to be. I'm not going to give that up. Let me work out with the team. And the coach says, nice persistence. But no, they don't even tell him about walk-on tryouts. Okay, that's how dedicated they were to not having Alan on the team. Well, he sees a poster for it, shows up at tryouts, shows up earlier, 43 other kids, most of them taller, and his relentless effort ended up being recognized by the coaches at that point. And they're like, we can't keep this kid off of the team. And so he ended up being on the roster the next three seasons, played only 59 minutes in his entire four-year career, but what a great experience he had. And he keeps seizing opportunities today. He's got a lot going on. Co-president of a food products company, founder of a leadership organization. He's a two-time author and a motivational speaker. And he talks a lot about his walk-on experience and the importance of teammates and fighting through things. And when you ask him, like, why do you do all this? Like, why can't you just be president of a company and then just relax and play some golf? And he said, once you get that high commitment level and once you're determined not to get thrown out of the gym, that's something that never goes away. So again, all these steps might be reminders to business owners, but to me, they're great accessible lessons for anybody on your team in terms of this is the blueprint to success. This is a formula you need to go forward. Nothing of this is like scientific or crazy or wild or who could possibly do that. It was folks who are making these determinations and these commitments. And again, Alan is a great example of somebody who said, you know, no matter what, I'm not going to let them throw me out of the gym. I'm going to make them pick me up and throw me out over and over and over until they don't let me back in again.
Wow. So as you went and found these folks to interview, there's 31 different stories, right, in the book. And as you went and found these folks, you had already kind of formulated in your mind, or had you already formulated in your mind these five steps and you validated it with them, or did you formulate the five steps as you were talking with them?
Good question. So I formulated the five steps prior to it, and then I started thinking through my own story. And that was my original idea was, could I write a book? Because tracking all these people took a long time, and it's not like they're easy. Like there's a, you know, just do a Google search for successful walk-ons in professional life, right? So I had to go through a lot. I originally thought, could I write one about my own story? But that's when I realized I don't think anybody wants to read just my own story, and it's better for me to test the hypothesis. So what I did was I just had folks tell open-ended, like, tell me about your story. Did you have challenges? Did you think about quitting? And a lot of these people did. They had, you know, the thought had crossed their mind, but they ended up either talking themselves out of it or having somebody else, you know, give them some encouragement, as you've alluded to before. So I had the theory in the background, but once they told their open-ended, you know, I just open-ended questions and their messages, sure enough, they followed a very, very similar pattern of what we found in the five steps of the walk-on method.
So at the end of that, I love that. That's what real journalism is, right? Ask open-ended questions. I wish we had lots more of that in the world today. But but at the end of it, did you actually walk through, here are the five things that I'm going to write about, and get their reaction to it? And if so, were there any, oh yeah, you're right, that's it, you know, that, or had they already been very self-aware of the lessons that they had learned?
So a lot of them were not self-aware. Like, they were almost, boy, it's great to talk to somebody who thinks the same way I do, because other people don't. Like, a lot of other people don't, and I don't get it. And then once we said, well, do you think this experience actually, you know, Forged Through Fire made a difference? And a lot of them were like, yeah, like Alan Williams, who I just mentioned, he said, partway through, a very successful business person who had been a walk-on said, this is the hardest thing you'll ever have to go through in your life. And Alan's like, really? Like, this doesn't seem that hard, like, compared to what all those different things could be in your life. But he realized, because you have to put yourself out there, you have so many avenues to quit and so many easier paths to take that most other college kids take. So most of them did not realize it. One other thing was, so I'm a big fan of the concept of servant leadership. And so after doing several of these interviews, somebody did say to me, you know, this is my first experience with servant leadership, because you are leading by following. Like, you are no doubt being a follower. You are not getting the playing time. You're sacrificing everything for the good of the team. And once I started bringing that up to people in the interviews, they were like, I never thought of it that way, but you are 100% correct. So while this book has the unique five-step walk-on method, servant leadership really runs throughout almost every single individual story.
I love that. I love that. So I can see behind you there, you're a voracious reader like I am. You know, in fact, you made a comment to me one time that reading business books is like getting an MBA for $15 or $20. I couldn't agree more. I love that. So in your own words, what sets this book apart from other business books?
Yeah, and for those who are watching, the bookshelf behind me, that is not wallpaper. Those are actual books. If you need me to pull one off the shelf or knock one down, I'm happy to do that. So yeah, there are a lot of books, and you know, you and I have read so many. Sometimes you think to yourself, why do I really need to read another one? Like, what is this going to teach me? So I think what makes the walk-on method special is, A, it's simplicity. Right? It's not some flow chart, something or other. I really can't grasp these concepts, or a new language that you have to learn. It's, you know, very simple, practical application, right? You can see how you can apply this to your work life. In fact, I have in the back of the book, there's an appendix. It's 43 walk-on do's and walk-on don'ts. And it shows 43 actions that you can take in your workplace in order to act more like a walk-on and get your career goals. I also think it's special because it can be a teaching tool, like I alluded to earlier, in terms of, this is something that you can give to any of your employees, especially somebody who's a sports fan, and it's very accessible, right? Everybody loves walk-on stories when a walk-on gets a scholarship or something like that. And so it can be very engaging from that standpoint. Also, the stories, like, we have 31 chapters in there. You can essentially read one story a day for a month, right? You don't have to be like, where do I pick up? Like, you can jump from one walk-on to the next. You can hop and skip around the book if you want. You only want to read about the basketball players? Go ahead. You only want to read about the football players? Great. If you only want to read about the rowers, well, you only have two chapters you're going to read, but you can do that if you want. So, you know, and I guess a question for the business owners is, would you like a team of people who would take a big shot, who would prepare with passion, who'd lean into obstacles, who would have emotional control, who would be relentless? Is that the kind of lessons you want taught in your team? And so, as you alluded to earlier, ordinary people can do this. You read this and say, I can do that. Like, why can't I do that? And you can really become extraordinary by following these steps.
That is awesome. It's a great book, and I highly recommend it to everyone. You know, one of the last paragraphs in your introduction to the book, I just want to read another quick section here. The beauty of the walk-on method is, the only person who can stop you from taking any one of the five steps is you. It takes no special skills or knowledge to take the big shot or prepare with passion. No advanced degree is required to control your emotions or maximize your unique strengths. If you want to increase your knowledge, skills, and competence, and if you want to change the trajectory of your career, then start
Thinking Like a Walk-On. And so so I would recommend that you go and get this book just out, fresh out on Amazon, and we'll have a link to it on our website as well. So, Jim, the more I talk to you, it's incredible how smart and handsome you are. You know, what's your secret?
It's about time somebody knows. Well, you know what? I'm not that handsome. I just do video interviews with people who aren't handsome, and it makes me appear.
Well there you go.
Oh my gosh, that was probably too personal.
Hey, I'm cheap shots. They're easy. So,
you promised quick wit and that everybody would enjoy it. So I might as well do it.
Exactly. So seriously, before we go, tell us a little bit about your first book. You told us a little bit at the beginning, Hire Like You Just Beat Cancer. Just give us a quick snippet on that, because I want our folks to go read that as well.
Sure. So when I was a young manager, you know, I thought I understood the importance of hiring top-notch people, right? Yeah, people, you know, hugely important, make your organization. But then when I was 32, I was diagnosed with colon cancer. And so being forced to step away from my business for an extended period of time really made me realize, boy, the people who I hired are going to make or break this business, right? If they have gaps, I can't be the one who's jumping in there. They've got to be able to do things on their own. And so the book has a lot of examples and best practices that you can implement at your organization to improve the hiring process, to improve the assessment process. We have tools in there, 258 tremendous interview questions. A lot of it is based on behavior-based interviewing. So not what would you do, but what did you do? And so the lessons that I learned when cancer knocked me down really helped build me up as a hiring manager. And so I apply those lessons aggressively every time I interview a potential employee. And the book really kind of talks through the system to make that happen.
That's awesome. So go get that book as well, in addition to the walk-on method. So, of course, this podcast is about maximizing business value. Jim, in your opinion, what is the one most important thing that you would recommend business owners do to build long-term sustainable value in their business?
Yeah, I think it ties in with the books that I've written is invest in your people, right? Hold out to hire the best. Don't just hire the least worst person who applied for the job in the month that you had it open, right? And then once you hire those folks, spend time with them, educate them, right? Make sure you have the long version of the story, not just here's some tasks to do, go do them. Really teach them about the business. Really learn from them. Really expose them to other trainings, other books, other learnings. And then as you continue to build them up, you can delegate to them. That's hard to beat. You know, going back to the whole sports analogy, if you've got the players, right, you're going to win a lot of games. So same thing applies to business. If you go out and get great people and you really invest in them and make them better every single day and give them the opportunity to do the job, that to me is how you're going to have a very valuable business with a very valuable team.
I think that's brilliant. Always sharpen the saw. Always sharpen the saw. Get them the training that they need. And my favorite nugget maybe out of this entire interview was never settle. Too many times I see business owners settling for how did you put it? The
least worst person who applied for the job.
The least worst person that applied for the job. Never settle at all. Always try and get the right people on the bus and get them in the right seats and relentlessly train. So wonderful, wonderful advice. Of course, for our listeners and viewers, they always know that I have to ask my bonus question, and that is, Jim, what personality trait has gotten you into the most trouble through the years?
I was going to say my rugged good looks, but obviously that would make people laugh out loud. So honestly, it's the passion. Like you can see I'm really passionate about these subjects. I'm really passionate about development, but I do have to watch myself that sometimes when I'm communicating with people, they can feel steamrolled, right? They can feel like, well, he's clearly concluded already. Like he's not open to any sort of a discussion when I actually am, but I'm presenting so much like I am totally committed and I found out the answer. And so I realize sometimes, I guess all the time, I have to slow down and bring people with me, right? So like you and I have talked about recurring revenue, right? That's a lot of what we speak about at these conferences. So if we just go and say to people, you got to do recurring revenue, but if we're able to talk to them about their business and their business struggles and how recurring revenue has helped them, where they could go get more, then they could be convinced of it as well, as opposed to just shouting and pointing at them. And again, not that I do it in an angry way, but I'm just super passionate about it. I just have to make sure. And in fact, I tell people up front, like, you might feel like I'm being steamrolled, and I don't mean to do that. So even as much passion as I speak with, as long as I speak, I'm open to your ideas. I'm going to try to control that better. If you see me a way that I can do better, slow me down. But I actually have notes up on my bulletin board over here, and it says, don't talk so fast and don't talk so long, because oftentimes that's where the passion comes out. So I remind myself to keep that in check.
That's awesome. That is awesome. I would, if I'd have guessed, I probably would have been the rugged good looks. we did this interview, but that is
great. Your check is in the mail, Mr.
Yeah.
Bronson.
Yeah, my passion gets me in trouble every now and then as well. So how can our viewers and listeners get in touch with you? And more importantly, where can they find the book?
Yeah, thank you. You can find the book on Amazon. So available in early October is when it's first out. And you can also keep track and keep in touch with me at Twitter. Just you can search my name. It's Jim_Roddy. You can find me on LinkedIn as well. We also have a podcast that we produce through the RSPA. It's called The Trusted Advisor. We also have the RSPA YouTube channel, and you can track it on there as well. And if you want to see some of my business writings, again, especially on the tech sector, but it's not so much technology as it is small business best practices, you just go to the RSPA website at gorspa.org, just click on blog, and you can subscribe to it from there. But again, back full circle, the book is available on Amazon. Just search for The Walk-On Method.
Awesome. This has been great fun, as I predicted. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with our listeners and viewers, Jim.
Thank you, Tom. Always great to be with you.
So you can find Jim Roddy on LinkedIn. You can reach out to us. We'll be happy to connect you with Jim. And don't forget that his book is on Amazon now, and you can get a link at our website, which is masterypartners.com. And of course, I'll put a link in the blog post this week so that you can find it very easily. This is the Maximize Business Value Podcast, where we give practical advice to business owners on how to build long-term sustainable value in your business. Be sure to tune in each week and follow us wherever you found this podcast, and be sure to connect. We love comments. We always respond. So until next time, I'm Tom Bronson, reminding you to model the walk-on method while you maximize business value.
Thank you for tuning into the Maximize Business Value Podcast with Tom Bronson. This podcast is brought to you by Mastery Partners, where our mission is to equip business owners to maximize business value so they can transition on their terms. Learn more on how to build long-term sustainable business value and get free value-building tools by visiting our website, www.masterypartners.com. That's master with a Y, masterypartners.com. Check it out.
That was perfect. I wouldn't make any changes on that.